Hey folks, I'm here today to tell you about Visible. Something unfortunate about wireless services, what you see isn't always what you get. But with Visible, what you see is what you get. No perception check required. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon for just $25 a month, taxes and fees included. If you're looking for a carrier that is upfront with no hidden fees, then go to Visible.com to make the switch. You don't need more than one line of wireless to save, and you're going to be getting unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. Visible is the wireless carrier that's constantly operating from a zone of truth. In their quest for total transparency, Visible wants you to know the monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com. Save on wireless without the hassle. Switch to Visible today and save at Visible.com.
Greetings, adventurers. Today we're excited to introduce you to a new story. Dark Dice, a horror podcast that blurs the line between actual play and audio drama, where the story is determined by the roll of the dice. Six adventurers embark on a journey into the ruinous domain of the Nameless God. They will never be the same again. One of the players is not what they seem after a doppelganger, a creature that can assume the form and voice of whatever it kills, infiltrates the team. As the players are picked off and replaced one at a time, can they figure out who the monster is before it's too late? Can you? Here's a quick example of what our show sounds like.
The shambler with the jar of liquid inside of him.
Soren Arkwright let loose an arrow that cracked the glass, passing through the spine of the creature. The shambler still managed to maintain its forward momentum, but stumbled as it eagerly tried to bite and swipe at Soren, landing near his feet.
As Jeff Goldblum has now joined our cast, Dark Dice is available however you listen to podcasts.
Hey everybody, welcome to the Dungeon Cast. I'm Will.
I'm Brian.
This is the podcast where we talk about everything Dungeons & Dragons, from chromatic chaos to chronological crossovers. Today, we're talking about chimeras and manticores.
Prepare yourselves.
Hey, Brian.
You know, it's been a while since we've had a twofer.
Yeah, it has. It has been a while, and it's crazy to think that we've done this show for 3 years, and we still haven't talked about chimeras and manticores, which are some real classic D&D monsters.
Quintessential mid-level combat stuff.
I would say so, definitely.
What, like level 5, 6, you're fighting this type of stuff?
Yeah, I would say manticores maybe from level 3 if you have a big party, but chimeras definitely level 5 and up for sure.
For sure.
So let's start with the chimera. In D&D, chimeras are large magical beasts, or in the case of 5e, monstrosities. They are essentially a combination of several different creatures, namely a lion, a goat, and a dragon, and sometimes a snake, depending on your edition. They are chaotic evil, and they are based off of the mythological creature of Greek mythology of the same name. So the earliest description of the chimera in Greek mythology is from Homer's The Iliad. Here it is described as a thing of immortal make, lion-fronted and snake behind, goat in the middle, and snorting out a breath of the terrible flame of bright fire.
This thing looks like it was patched together in some unholy mess, but it's unkillable. That I promise you.
Pretty much. It was said to be a singular creature and the offspring of Typhon and Echidna, both mighty and terrible monsters in their own right. And it was said to be the sibling of both Cerberus and the Hydra.
Oh, man.
So its depiction varies in art throughout the ages, but it's usually represented as a lion with a goat head protruding from its back and a live serpent for its tail. So, yeah. In D&D, the chimera looks quite a bit different. It has the hindquarters of a goat and the forequarters of a lion and a set of dragon's wings and tail. Chimeras have three heads, one of a lion, one of a goat, and one of a dragon, and they are all set at the front of the beast, similar to, like, a Cerberus.
One of the earlier boss fights in Gauntlet Legends is a chimera.
Yes, it's the fight for the mountain region.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, I fucking love that game. And it's a bitch of a fight.
Yeah, it's pretty hard.
No, I was wrong. No, the Red Dragon's the mountain region. Chimera is the castle region.
Oh, yeah. The Red Dragon that you fight in that game has so much fucking gold it gives out.
It does.
I never knew.
Where was I? The dragon head can be that of any of the chromatic dragons, and its breath weapon will match whatever type of head it has.
Okay.
So there's some pretty cool artwork, I think, in the third edition Monster Manual, where it had a white dragon head. I was like, oh, that Ooh. Looks cool.
What about like the other animals? Is it like a certain kind of snake, like a viper or something like that?
The snake one's not too common. Like the canonical D&D Chimera has dragon head, goat head, and lion head.
Okay.
And no snake thing involved.
Yeah, and there's not a lot of variation between lions.
No, not really.
Yeah.
I suppose you could have, like, you could another big cat, so like a jaguar, a ram.
Let's just start homebrewing up our favorite. Let's each do one. I want an Ibex.
Okay. And I like that. That's a good choice.
A rattler.
No. There is no snake. Remember, dragon, cat.
Fine, I'll do one with a dragon.
I'm not sure what kind of animal a goat is.
Okay, what is it, the brass dragon that's obnoxious, or is it the copper? I always mix them up.
Both.
Okay, which one's the more obnoxious one? The brass, right?
Yeah, brass.
Okay, sure. It's going to be a brass dragon,
yeah.
A rattler,
mm-hmm.
and then Ibex. Or not a rattler. Damn it, not the rattler. Snake. Yeah, I mean...
You're really attached to the snake idea.
Which cat?
Yeah,
which
big cat. What's your favorite big cat?
Mountain lion.
Okay. If we're going with just favorites, blue dragon head, cheetah, and I don't have a favorite type of goat. Which is not a sentence I ever thought I'd say.
And goat. Just a goat.
And goat. If I can go with other hoofed creatures, I guess I would go with a moose.
I like mine because I have a rattlesnake that's like shaking, like, okay. And then the goat's like, and the dragon's like, I have a funny joke to tell you.
That is wholly way more terrifying than the regular chimera, which is 5 feet tall, 10 feet long, and 4,000 pounds, by the way. Just need to get that out. And now let's move on. The origins of the chimera vary depending on edition, but previous to 5e, the origin was purposely left mysterious.
Okay.
The most common possible origin for the chimera was said to be a human experimentation, magical ritual that mixed with interbreeding dragons, lions, and goats.
That's like a full Metal Alchemist kind of.
Yeah, sure.
They just called the amalgamation of creatures they made chimera.
Yeah, exactly. Now, 5e presents us with a more definitive origin, which I think is pretty cool. It is said that at some point, Demogorgon, the Prince of Demons, Prince of Demons was summoned to the Prime Material Plane at some point. During his brief conquest across the land, Demogorgon was unimpressed with the creatures that surrounded him.
Shout out to Demogorgon.
Indeed. But he was unimpressed with the creatures that surrounded him, and with his demonic power, he transformed them into horrific multi-headed monstrosities. This act gave rise to the first chimera. Though most of the other creatures ended up dying out, chimeras lived on and serve as a grim reminder of what happens when a demonic prince makes their way to the material plane.
I start fucking shit up really bad. I start fusing things together. We will all have two heads.
Indeed. So regardless of their origin, chimera at this point are a self-sustaining species found in the wild, albeit extremely rarely. Their draconic blood influences them to seek out caves as lairs. Most chimeras are solitary by nature, but some do choose to live in prides if that lion nature really kind of overrides
the
rest
cat
of them.
Is the biggest head on the
body.
Yeah,
if the lion's the biggest head, then yeah, they might live in prides.
The dragon head's all small and shriveled up.
I know, it's just kind of hanging out there on the side.
It's like spitting, it's a green dragon like spitting the fume breath or whatever.
Right.
Like,
yeah, seriously. So, although chimeras are quite stupid creatures with an intelligence of 3, so that's just
that's
3
pretty
points.
Pretty damn stupid.
It's 3 points above a rock, so. They have a lot of draconic tendencies regardless of their intelligence. So it makes their behavior a bit curious. They'll stake out large territories, like 10-mile radius type territories, and they prey on wild game and protect their territory fiercely. Chimeras view other powerful creatures within their territory as rivals to be humiliated and defeated.
Ah.
So they have a tendency to raid and plunder communities in order to accumulate hordes. Like,
I imagine because they're so stupid that they collect just like dumb bullshit to put in their hoard.
Right,
like,
yeah, anything shiny.
Like it's not a good hoard. It's just a hoard.
It's a really shitty hoard. but they're proud of it because that's in their nature. It's said that a chimera's pride is so draconic like that offering one gifts or treasures can prevent them from attacking you and cause a chimera to allow would-be prey to pass freely. So they got that bit of draconic pride and greed going on despite being dumb as a rock. Yeah. So
yeah, you can be dumb and prideful.
It's true.
It's a bad combo.
It is. Chimeras are omnivores that hunt and devour whatever they please. Their chaotic evil nature drives them to enjoy hunting men and elves most, though. It is said that they have a voracious appetite and are more than capable of overhunting their territory. Hmm. In the event of food scarcity, the goat head of the chimera is capable of sustaining the whole body by grazing on various shrubbery and grass. They just don't enjoy it.
I see.
I mean, I'm sure the goat head enjoys it, but I don't think anybody else in the situation enjoys it.
Okay.
As an apex predator, most creatures cannot stand up to the might of a chimera, but common rival monsters include dragons, griffins, manticores, peritons, and wyverns.
Nice. We've covered a lot of those.
Yeah. As a matter of fact, we've covered all but manticores and peritons, and we're covering manticores today. So.
Yeah. So.
There are, yeah, there are a couple chimera variants from previous editions, which were kind of interesting. There is a creature called the Gorgomira, which is, it swaps the goat head for, it swaps the goat parts, excuse me, for Gorgon parts.
Oh, shit.
And so that's interesting. And then there's a creature called the Thessalmira, which swaps the goat head and goat parts for Hydra parts. So it, rather than having three heads, it has like six heads, and like three of them are Hydra heads.
Holy shit.
Yeah, so that's interesting. So we will go over the 5e stat block before a list of abilities. Chimeras can fly, albeit very clumsily. They will often use their flight strictly for fleeing or surveying their territory and almost never flight midair because they're so fucking bad at it. they also have Draconic Breath based off the dragon head type, which we kind of said before. If a chimera loses a head in battle, it will actually still survive and the head will eventually grow back and they'll go in hiding until the head grows back.
Yeah. That's intense.
So speaking of their heads, the goat head is said to be useless in battle, in at least in previous editions, although in 5e it has stats. And it said that the goat head was capable of sleeping through entire combats. And I really like the picture.
Too much trash.
I like the picture. Like all three heads are really independent of each other. And the goat is just really stressed out about everything all the time.
It's a regular goat. Yeah, it's all just huge a goat trapped in this body.
Trapped in this body.
It's sandwiched between two monsters.
And when the fights break out, it just passes out. It can't handle it. It's too much.
It just bleats. Exactly. Bleats out of existence.
But the 5e chimera, that's not true for it because the goat head can attack. So let's go over the stats.
The goat is narcoleptic.
Unless you have any questions about chimeras.
I'm questioning everything about it right now. But yeah, go for it.
So chimera, we're looking at large monstrosity, chaotic evil, armor class of 14, challenge rating is 6. So this is a pretty beefy boy.
Oh yeah.
You don't want to be fighting this below level 4. You probably don't even want to fight this at level 5 necessarily.
Unless you have nice little tricks to do.
Indeed. They have 114 HP, strength 19, dexterity 11, constitution 19, intelligence of 3, like I said before, wisdom of 14, and charisma of 10. They can understand Draconic, but they can't actually speak it.
Sure.
Which is actually really impressive that they can understand it with an intelligence of 3. essentially, they just get two things. They get their multi-attack and they get their fire breath or whatever breath it is you want. So their multi-attack is 3 attacks. It's a bite, a horn, and a claw attack.
Nice.
And they're all pretty comparable. The bite does 2d6 plus 4, horns do 1d12 plus 4, and the claws do 2d6 plus 4. Plus 4, and then the fire breath is a recharge on 5 or 6, just like a dragon, and it's pretty, it's kind of a doozy, like dragon breath is.
That could take down your squishy characters.
Oh yeah, DC 15 dexterity saving throw for 78 fire damage, and at lower levels it's devastating.
Yikes.
So fun fact about the chimera stat block is I used the chimera stat block and reflavored it to be the Primina stat block in Super Quest Saga when you first fought her.
Yeah, she was Chimera-esque.
She was she did a claw, bite, and a horn attack. She has all three of those when she transforms. Spoilers for Super Quest Saga. And then I just used the fire breath attack. I think I tweaked some of the ability scores and stuff like that, but it didn't really matter.
Yeah, you guys should check out Super Quest. We'll talk about it more later.
Indeed. And with that, we'll take a short rest.
I guess we'll talk about it pretty soon then.
Okay.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify is great. They're taking businesses of all sizes, cradling them in their arms, to help them grow by giving them the tools they need. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S., and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success at every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/dungeoncast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/dungeoncast now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/dungeoncast.
As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch, and organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system, so wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/realm.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to my humble abode. That's right, you guessed it. It's that part of the episode where we're not talking about that last thing. We're talking about this new thing, and it's our love for you.
I love you.
I love you. The listener. I mean, I guess I love you too.
I love you too, man.
Okay, let's talk about, let's plug something.
Let's talk about SuperQuest Saga, because we were kind of just talking about it. So SuperQuest Saga is a live 5e playthrough where we play on YouTube, and it is a sci-fi space opera type game.
Yeah,
and
it's also a podcast.
It's also a podcast, and you can listen to it on any podcast app that you can imagine.
Or soundcloud.com/SuperQuestSaga. But if you are on iTunes, please leave it an iTunes review.
Indeed. And if you like this show, I guarantee you will like that show.
Yeah.
I can't tell you how many people have told us, like, I don't even like D&D live plays, but I love this one. And I love hearing that. I love seeing that. Love reading that.
Yes. And we tailor the show to be very palatable for a, you know, your average podcast listener. We're not doing the whole 4-hour session thing. These episodes are like an hour and change. Maybe I think our longest episode's like an hour and 40 minutes.
I think that was our longest. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's the high end, honestly.
it is. I think we average about an hour 20, hour 30.
Yeah. And a lot of people are really happy with that aspect of the show as well.
Right.
We get a lot done. We're ending on cliffhangers a lot. Will's really great with that. So definitely worth checking it out. It's my favorite game I've ever played in so far as a player.
You.
Yeah, for sure. It's been a lot of fun. I get to do a lot of cool like sound work. So there's like music on the show and some sound effects and the Carter Huttenberg intros and stuff.
Those are fun.
Yeah, they've been a lot of fun. But yeah, definitely go check it out.
Links in the description.
Yeah, a unique 5e experience, and if you like us on the show, you'll definitely like Jake and Josh. Your special guest, Jake, who was here last episode, is a player on that show, as well as Josh Freeland, a very good friend of ours and a good friend of the show, and Sebastian Crenshaw, who's a half-orc paladin.
Indeed. And with that being said, I think we can get back to the show.
Yeah, let's do it.
Well, we've returned, but what is all this all around us?
Well, Brian, I believe it's the show.
What?
Let's get back to it.
Oh, shoot, you're right.
Okay.
It's the show.
So let's talk about manticores.
Okay.
In D&D, manticores are large magical beasts, or in the case of 5e, monstrosities. They are essentially a combination of lion, man, and bat. And maybe porcupine, it's kind of hard to say, or scorpion, again, it's hard to say. They're considered to be lawful evil creatures, and they are based directly on the creature from ancient Persian mythology of the same name. So, as I just said, the manticore is a legendary creature of ancient Persia. It is similar to the Sphinx in that it is said to have the body of a lion and the head of a man. It is its name means man-eater. The earliest depictions of the manticore describe the tail of the beast as being ended with long spines like that of a porcupine.
Ooh.
But later depictions in medieval art and literature describe it as having the tail of a scorpion.
Okay, both are crazy bad.
Yeah. It was essentially a cryptozoological terror said to roam the land and devour men.
Yeah, because some dudes or whoever were in their tent at night, in the middle of the desert on, their version of peyote. Like, what would be scary to eat some fools?
Right. Well, I think
they draw this bad boy up.
So I think it's more along the lines of that. In India, there is, and all historically has been, the problem of man-eater tigers.
Oh,
so
yeah.
I think that's kind of the source of this cryptozoology. You know, humans, we like to tell tall tales.
That's a pretty rogue issue, right? Like, that's a very, get struck by lightning kind of odds thing, like the man-eating tiger.
I don't know what the odds are or what the odds were, but
I feel like it's mostly mythological. I don't know. I just kind of want to back the tiger on this one.
Well, you know that there's those masks that I know in certain areas of India that they wear, where they wear a mask on the back of their head. Because the tiger will only attack from behind, so if it sees a face, it'll try and get around, but it sees another face, and then it's like, oh shit, that human has two faces, I'm leaving.
Man, I'm trying to learn a lot more about India, like that part of the world. Like, I know about the monsoons and stuff now, and how that affects the world economy so much, and and the big color event they do, which I forget, the name escapes me right now, but it's very beautiful. I really don't know very much about the world other than what I've Netflixed up.
Well, unfortunately for you, this is a show about D&D, not the world.
Yeah.
So let's go back to D&D.
Okay. Okay. That's fine. That's definitely more on brand.
So the D&D version of the manticore is pretty close to the original, with the exception of the added bat wings.
Nice.
And or dragon wings. Like, it's debatable. They are depicted as giant lion-bodied creatures with bat or dragon-like wings and a tail that ends in a mass of deadly spikes.
I mean, you got to keep the bat wings, right? Because they're not really doing bat stuff until you get to, devils and demons, right? Like in this game?
I guess so, yeah.
I don't see a lot of cool, you got the man bat from Batman. That's a good one. This kind of reminds me of that. Plus a lion, that's really good.
It is really good.
Some evil shit. Keep those bat wings.
Its head is described as mannish, part human, part lion. If you look at the 5e Monster Manual, there's a really good depiction of exactly what that looks like.
Yeah, it's actually open on the table
there, and it looks real good.
It looks like you could take the head off and put it on a Muppet.
Yeah, kind of.
And it's one of the grimier looking Muppets.
Its gigantic mouth is lined with three rows of razor sharp teeth, like that of a great white shark.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Its mane and back are also said to be lined with spines.
Ooh.
That may or may not be poisonous.
Like a lionfish. So that would be cool if the jaw extended like a shark's.
Mm-hmm.
You know how
mm-hmm.
it pops out of place to snap. Yeah. Fun times. Plus sure. you straight okay. off the ground.
So when it comes to the origins of the manticore, only 4E provides any type of information. And since we know 4E pretty much has its own canon, independent of everything else, you can make of it what you will. But 4E posits that devils had a hand in the creation of manticores, specifically a powerful devil named Alokes, the Butcher of Nessus. He supposedly ran experiments that weaved together the flesh of men, lions, and bats. It is said that many manticores could be found in service of devils in the Nine Hells. And manticores do have a lawful evil nature that is canonical, so.
Okay. Yeah. They're just looking around what do I got a lot of extra parts of?
Right.
Men, basically. Lion, bats.
Indeed.
All right.
So although quite a bit more intelligent than chimeras, manticores are just as much the brutish, violent, and wild beasts. They carve out territories in rural badlands and rocky hills where they hunt far and wide for prey. They operate mostly on their killer instinct and hateful emotions. They're full of hate, apparently.
Right on.
Though many operate in solitude, manticores do have a reputation for living in hunting groups called prides. So they are much more likely to be in a group than, say, a chimera. I would say it's like, probably with manticores, it's probably like 60% are in prides, while 40% are solitary. With chimeras, it's more like 90% are solitary and 10% are in prides.
Okay, that's cool.
For whatever those percentages are worth.
Whatever that means.
Whatever that means. Though their intelligence is quite limited, manticores do possess a malevolent cunning and even the ability to speak, albeit quite crudely. Much like ogres, manticores have short tempers paired with a limited ability to reason. And it's a combination which can make a conversation with one, presuming you could actually get one to actually talk to you.
Yeah, they don't look like they have like much for lips, and like trying to get
words out of that
sound waves past all those teeth, sure, is really going to break up all the frequencies.
But presuming you do get one to talk to you, that conversation is essentially a minefield to walk through.
He because sounds like this.
Please don't do that on the show ever again.
But I really want to.
Okay.
Okay, it's fine.
So manticores are easily offended and enraged when spoken to about or in concepts, jokes, innuendos, riddles that they don't understand. Like, you got to speak simply to them or they're going to get mad and eat you. I mean, they're probably going to get mad and eat you anyways, but that's a sure way to make it happen.
Okay, I'm trying really hard not to do the voice.
You can do it one more time.
I'm really mad about the riddle you said. What are you trying to confuse me?
Manny the Manticore.
Manny the Manticore. He's a real winner.
Okay, so the lawful nature of manticores is not really elaborated upon, except for the fact that they do seem to have a sort of affinity for serving wicked masters loyally. This can pretty much be any creature that is stronger and or smarter than it that's also willing to regularly feed it.
Yeah, you throw it a treat. Thank you, master.
Oh, God, no. You're turning into Yoda.
Okay, that's it. I'm done with it.
So, like, you'll commonly see manticores in the service of, like, orcs or hobgoblins, hill giants, evil wizards, etc.
That's like orcs are riding on their backs.
That's
like,
yeah, I could see that.
Funky Kong style with their sandals.
I think I once ran a campaign where, like, this orc warlord came, like, riding, flying through the air in a manticore. That was fun.
Oh, my gosh.
That was fun. So in the wild, manticores are apex predators that dominate their territory. And their major territorial rivals include chimera, griffins, peritons, and wyverns. If a far greater creature such as a dragon shows up, all bets are off. They're screwed.
Okay.
Though chromatic dragons may find a use to taming manticores. So you'll see that as well, where a dragon might tame a manticore, keep it in its lair. Okay, moving on.
Say, wait,
yeah,
what?
I thought you were going to say something there.
Oh, no.
Okay. When it comes to food, manticores are voracious carnivores who will eat most any creature, but it's said that they favor human flesh above all things.
Ooh,
this seems to be a direct holdover from the in real life mythos of manticore, meaning man-eater. That being said, any questions about manticores before I go over the stat block?
They're scary. You know how
they are scary.
Like the eagle or like a bird of prey will grab you with talons in like the lower quadrant of their body.
Yeah.
This one looks like it'll just bear hug you from the sky with the front end.
Or it'll just grab you with this massive mouth.
Yeah, dude.
God, look at those teeth.
That snapping great white action.
Indeed. Mm-hmm. So the manticore is quite a bit weaker than the chimera. It's only challenge rating 3. So about half as weak.
Like an orc can maintain control over it. It can't be like super duper strong.
No one's doing that to a chimera unless they're a really high level character. So it's a large monstrosity. It's considered to be lawful evil. It's got a 14 armor class, 68 HP, 17 strength, 16 dex, 17 con, 7 intelligence. So more than twice as smart as a chimera. And 7 points smarter than a rock. 12 wisdom, 8 charisma. Let's see. It has tail spike regrowth. The manticore has 24 tail spikes. Used spikes regrow when the manticore finishes a long rest. So that's pretty cool. Multi-attack. It's got a bite and claw. It'll make 3 attacks. One with its bite, 2 with its claw, or 3 with its tail spikes, which are ranged, by the way.
Oh, shoot. Really? They can fire those motherfuckers off.
Wow. Yeah. So tail spike, ranged weapon attack, +5 to hit, range 100 to 200 feet. My God.
That's pretty far.
That is really far. But they don't do a lot of damage. Only 1d8 +3 piercing damage, which makes sense, unless they're poisonous. I mean, it's just a quill that's going to get in you and be uncomfortable.
They took a monster feat called Spine Sniper.
Indeed.
Which of these monsters do you think is superior?
Oh, Chimera by far. Chimera could probably take two Manticores at once, easy.
But that's in a straight up battle. Do you think like definitely. Like their utility to humanoid races is in favor of the Manticore?
Oh yeah, if you want one for a mount, you want the Manticore because the Manticore can fly better, can fight mid flight, and is smart enough to be trained to do things.
But well, that's I mean, if you're powerful enough to subjugate either, you would take the Chimera, right?
Maybe not, because it just depends on the situation. But if you, like, for a mount is what I keep thinking of, you don't want the Chimera. They fly like shit.
You want something kind of intelligent to help you navigate.
And they're super not smart, Chimera, so.
Yeah.
Chimera is something that you put in a room to keep other people out.
Like the three-headed dog in Harry Potter?
Yeah, or like the Chimera from Gauntlet Dark Legacy.
Or like another Chimera that they literally did that with.
Yes, exactly.
Okay.
Any other questions about Manticores? Because we went back to talking about Chimeras.
Well, I went into a downward spiraling comparison of the two.
Okay. So that sounds like it's time we take a long rest.
Yeah.
But before we do that, what do we want to talk to the audience about, Brian?
You know what? You guys are really cool. Okay. I don't think we tell you guys it's that enough.
We don't, even though we do kind of tell them.
Well, we tell them every episode. But thank you for leaving feedback, like critiques of the show. That Indeed. Helps us improve.
It does.
So when you leave a YouTube comment and you're pointing out something, I mean, it's always nice when people are tasteful about it.
Right.
And they're not just like hate bashing. Like we really do appreciate those types of critiques because we use them to improve. So honest opinions are welcome here. Thank you guys so much for... doing that. A lot of you do that, and we do implement those things in the show as best we can. I think we should thank people in our Discord.
Indeed.
If you want to interact with Will and I, or with Discord's the awesome people in our
bet.
Discord, yeah, we try to foster a very positive community, mm-hmm. and we try to make the show a safe space for newbies, especially. But veteran players are always welcome. There are people in there looking for games. There are people in there looking to have conversations about general topics. There's a discussion about Dungeon Cast productions like Super Quest Saga and the Dungeon Cast itself, where people talk about the episodes that have just happened. So if you're trying to avoid spoilers, that might not be the best place yet.
That's true.
But
That's true.
Eventually, yeah, definitely get in there.
And the link for that's in the description.
So. Yeah. So thank you guys. We're nearly, I think, 800 members strong at the time of this recording. It's really grown and blossomed into an incredible place. It's always been a great place. Thank you so much to our admins and mods that help make it what it is.
Mm-hmm.
Will and I couldn't possibly maintain that on our own.
No way.
So without you guys, it wouldn't be possible to have that type of community. If you're looking for a safe space to talk D&D or role-playing games, or if you're just going to jump into our off-topic channel and, you know, talk about your day, that's all stuff that goes on in our Discord. So please come talk to us and be a part of the show.
With that being said, I'm going to call it a game. We'll talk to you guys later.
Bye.
Hey there, this is Justin Bartha. I made a funny new podcast, King of the Egg Cream. It has the greatest cast in the history of podcasts with actors like Louis Black.
I'm torn by my feelings for two women.
Bobby Cannavale.
You can eat it, or if someone hits you, you can put it on your cut.
Melanie Lynskey.
I wonder what these marvelous things are that look just like boiled chicken feet.
Jason Ritter.
I can break things and pick locks and kill people.
Michael Stuhlbarg.
The whole point is to inspire people that they should make themselves better.
Ari Grainer.
No, don't whet its appetite. What are you, an idiot?
Me, Justin Bartha.
That's not just any egg cream, that's a Lemke's special.
And all narrated by the hilarious Richard Kind.
This is the story of Harry Dalowitz. And how he rose from nothing to become New York's King of the Egg Cream.
So if you like funny true stories, come listen to King of the Egg Cream, available wherever you get your podcasts.